This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: Iran rejects Western media claims about sending drones to Russia, saying Tehran believes the Ukraine crisis should be settled through political means. The leader of the Palestinian resistance group Islamic Jihad says people of Palestine and its fighters will never surrender to Israel. Also coming up, Moscow denounces the Ukrainian president's call for NATO's preventive strikes against Russia, saying such statements are an appeal to start another world war. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour: Iran's foreign minister has once again rejected allegations that it provided Russia with weapons for the ongoing war with Ukraine. Hossein Amir Abdullahian says Tehran has not and will not provide any sort of arms to Russia to be used in the war. He made the remarks in a phone call with his Finnish counterpart, Pekka Haavisto. Amir Abdullahian said his country wants that Russia and Ukraine resolve their conflict through political means. He underlined that any kind of military aid to the warring sides would only delay the restoring of peace. The Ukrainian military has recently accused Russia of using Iranian-made drones in the Mykolaiv region. Kiev also announced downgrading diplomatic relations with Iran, citing a similar pretext. Tehran expressed regret over the decision and advised Ukraine to avoid being influenced by third parties seeking to destroy the two countries' relations. Iran accuses the West and its media empire of using human rights as a tool to exert pressure on other countries. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani was reacting to the recent anti-Iran sanctions by the Canadian government. Kanani noted that the world hasn't forgotten the historical crimes committed against the indigenous people in Canada. He also referred to the forced separation of over 150,000 indigenous children from their families and the recent discovery of mass graves of children in several Canadian provinces. He said talking about other countries does not change the history of rights violations by one of the closest allies of the US. Ottawa has imposed fresh sanctions on dozens of Iranian individuals and entities over alleged human rights violations. It is not the first time Canada has come up with such measures against Iran, with which it doesn't have any diplomatic relations. Iran's foreign minister has criticized the West for its double standards on human rights, especially with regard to women's rights. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in a phone call with his Irish counterpart, Simon Coveney. Amir Abdullahian was reacting to interventionist remarks by some Western countries following recent riots in Iran over the death of a young woman after being taken by police. The top Iranian diplomat said Iranians have the constitutional right to hold peaceful protests. He, however, stressed that some rioters were directed from overseas and were incited by foreign media outlets. He said the rioters vandalized public property and attacked people and police with firearms and cold weapons. Amir Abdullahian noted that rioters will be brought to justice. The Iranian minister also highlighted the internet restrictions during the January 2021 protests, which erupted over the US presidential election outcome. He said even the social media accounts of then American president were shut down. Iran has released a video of two French spies arrested some 4 months ago, in which they've admitted to their efforts to incite chaos and unrest in the country. One of the spies has admitted to being an agent at the French Foreign Intelligence Agency, known as the General Directorate for External Security. She proceeds to explain how they brought in large sums of cash in order to fund riots and strikes, as well as purchase weaponry in an attempt to stir up chaos. She also states that their main aim was to lay the groundwork for mass unrest and trigger a revolution in Iran. The Iranian Ministry of Intelligence announced their arrest in May. The ministry stated that they had entered the country with the aim of hijacking peaceful rallies to create a social disorder. Journalist and political commentator Sayed Mohsen Abbas joined us earlier with his comments. He said Western countries are involved in espionage activities in Iran with the aim of regime change.
Well, firstly, I think it's a despicable reality that the Anglo-Zionist and French and other Western powers shamelessly have engaged in non-stop regime change espionage. Essentially, not only have they done it in terms of trying to undermine any peaceful nuclear program Iran had, they've also done it to gather information on local people and to work on them in combination with cyber warfare. There's an entire cultural psychological operation that's been going on in a never-ending way. There are over 100 Iranian channels which are basically fronts for intelligence agencies outside. So there's been a combined attack, and it's no surprise to find these French spies who have been implicated and who have been caught, it seems, red-handed. Now, the thing is, it's not just the French. The British have been caught at it. The Americans have been caught at it big time.
The United States has imposed fresh sanctions on 7 Iranian officials. Washington accuses the targeted persons of, quote, supporting internet shutdown and suppressing peaceful protests. The U.S. Treasury Department says Iran's Interior Minister, Communications Minister, and the head of the Iranian Cyber Police are among those put on the sanctions list. Protests erupted in mid-September after a young woman died in hospital after being taken by police. They soon turned into violent riots, with some people vandalizing public property and attacking security forces with firearms and other weapons. Iran's first vice president says Iran and Russia can use their national currencies in bilateral commercial transactions, underlining that there are good capacities available between the two countries. Mohammad Mukhbir underscored the importance of replacing foreign currencies in Iran-Russia trade exchanges. He made the remarks on the sidelines of the second Caspian Economic Forum held in Moscow. In a meeting with governors and regional heads of the Russian Federation, he described the existing capacities as useful and constructive to boost bilateral relations. Mukhbir said both Tehran and Moscow are serious about expanding their economic ties to the maximum level.
The second Caspian Economic Forum has been held in Moscow. During the event, issues including developing trade and economic cooperation, interaction in the field of ecology, energy, transport and logistics were discussed. Delegations from the Caspian five literal states, namely Russia, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Iran and Azerbaijan, were present at the event.
The countries of the Caspian region will have to work in the current turbulent conditions of the global economy and geostrategic tensions. The West is putting increasing pressure on other countries in an attempt to maintain the existing world order.
The Caspian region possesses a significant part of the world's gas and oil reserves. It is of high significance, especially at a time when the whole world is facing an unprecedented energy crisis. The Iranian authorities came up with a new proposal to address those issues.
In order to unify and harmonize tariffs for rail, road and sea transportation, expanding trade and economic cooperation, we propose to establish a committee for cooperation in the field of transport, transit and customs business.
The Islamic Republic, given its geographical location, has very good opportunities to conduct operations in the oil and gas sector, as well as providing energy supplies to other regions. Iran has stressed the need to accelerate the unification of the country's electric power networks with those of the Caspian states.
The main purpose of this forum is boosting the economy of regional countries and to enable the Caspian states to use their opportunities to develop trade and economic cooperation, culture and tourism. Also, everyone should not only use the opportunities of the Caspian Sea, but also protect it. We are actively working in the development of the North-South Transport Corridor. The shipping lines of the Islamic Republic of Iran have allocated 300 containers for the transportation of goods to Russia.
Apart from what was said and proposed at the event, the forum also had good news for the member states. Cruise shipping on the Caspian Sea is set to begin in 2023 for the first time in history.
More than 1,000 delegates from the five Caspian Sea littoral states, as well as Belarus, Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan, have taken part in the forum. In the meeting, the participants agreed to adopt decisions to enhance all-out cooperation among countries in the Caspian region. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
A mass rally has been held in the besieged Gaza Strip to mark the 35th anniversary of the establishment of the Islamic Jihad movement. The movement that refuses to recognize the Israeli regime while maintaining armed resistance as the only way to liberate Palestine. Ashraf Shannon reports.
Thousands of Palestinians have rallied in the blockaded Gaza Strip to mark the 35th anniversary of the outset of the Islamic Jihad movement. People from all walks of life joined to show their support. The Islamic Jihad movement is highly respected by all Palestinian factions and has always been a uniting factor among them. The movement was founded by the late Dr. Fathi Shaqaqi, who was inspired by the Iranian Revolution and the teachings of the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini.
Today we pay tribute to our founder Fathi Shaqaqi and all the martyrs. Our path is a very long one and paved by the blood of martyrs who sacrificed their lives for the sake of Islam and for the sake of Al-Quds.
Ziad Al-Nakhala, the Secretary General of Islamic Jihad, addressed the attendees via satellite link. During his speech, Al-Nakhala stressed the unity among all Palestinian factions and praised the axis of resistance against the Israeli regime.
Gaza is part of the axis of resistance, and this rally stresses that armed resistance is the key to the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine. People attending this event are affirming their allegiance to the resistance and to the Islamic Jihad movement.
The Islamic Jihad movement and its leaders remain blacklisted by the European Union and the United States for refusing to recognize the Israeli regime.
We are all here to support the resistance against the Zionist regime. Our people are sending a strong message to the whole world today about their unwavering support for the resistance. We will continue our struggle until the liberation of Al-Quds.
Islamic Jihad supporters want the Israeli regime to know that their movement is a force to be reckoned with.
35 years on, the popularity of the Islamic Jihad movement continues to grow due to the movement's strict adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli regime. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Russia has criticized the Ukrainian president for calling on the Western military alliance, NATO, to launch preventive strikes on Moscow. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said such statements are, quote, nothing other than an appeal to start yet another world war with unpredictable, monstrous consequences. The reaction came after Volodymyr Zelensky said he believed the strikes were necessary to prevent any use of nuclear weapons by Russia. Russia's foreign ministry has also accused Zelensky of trying to provoke a nuclear war. This as Moscow has time and again stated that it is not considering a nuclear strike on Ukraine. But Russia had warned that it will use any means necessary to protect its borders, people, and sovereignty. As Ukraine makes advances in the southern Kherson region and the north of Donbass, Johnny Miller reports from pro-Russian positions around Gorilovsky in the center of the Donetsk region.
The battered village of Golmovsky, the front line is only 100 meters away. There is a deadly tension here, as the streets are almost deserted.
And there are a few people on the streets here picking up humanitarian supplies. I've tried to speak to some of them, but they just shake their head and say, I'd like to speak to you, but we just need to rush home because it's too dangerous here. There's shelling at any moment. They can be hit.
In some relative shelter, this man would speak to me.
Are you concerned about Ukrainian advances to the north of here?
No, I don't think they will come here. Everyone will rise up and won't let them. The people here have nowhere else to go. They couldn't beat us when there were only a few of us, and now Russia supports us.
And what do you think of the Ukrainians and the Ukrainian military?
They are not human. They know perfectly well where they shell. The square here is full of craters. Women were killed just over there while working. They know what they target.
It is mostly the elderly who remain in this town. They have nowhere else to go, and so are stranded in the middle of an artillery duel between the opposing armies. The boom of outgoing fire, a pro-Russian artillery piece, can't be far from the village. This man tells me he's 76 years old. He fears the coming winter, as his windows have been smashed by a blast. He also blames the Ukrainians for the war, and says they were sent here by the Americans and the Europeans. We head to the neighboring village of Zaitsevo. It was fully taken by pro-Russian forces a couple of weeks ago.
The front line's a couple of hundred meters away from here. It's understandably a ghost town at the moment. Very few civilians are here. Now, Barmut, a major settlement, isn't too far to the north of here. The Russians, or the pro-Russians, have been trying to take that settlement for months now. And just further to the north of that is Lyman, where the Ukrainian army has had some major successes in the last few days.
The situation is unstable. As you know, Zaitsevo is finally completely liberated. All its parts are now under our control. I think being here today, you'll hear that it's quite loud at the front lines. Artillery, both ours and the enemy's, are working. It's still early to relax.
Are you concerned about the Ukrainian advances to the north?
The north of our republic is a bit far from us. In our direction, it's only our forces that are moving forward. What's going on there decides nothing for us.
Amongst the deadly tension of this village, the incongruous site of a rose garden, it houses a monument to civilians killed by Ukrainian shelling. It was built 18 months before the Russians sent their army across the border in February. A reminder that Ukraine has been bombing pro-Russian areas here for 8 years.
I lived and worked here in the village and saw what's going on. I can tell you there is nobody here, including me, who would agree to any compromise. We have suffered so much during this time that hardly anything can make peace between us.
With peace talks unlikely anytime soon, frontline positions are fluctuating across hundreds of kilometers of Ukraine. Both sides will want to gain as much territory as possible before the winter comes, making advances more difficult. Jenny Miller, Donbass.
Turning elsewhere, the OPEC Plus group of oil producers announces its first production cut in 2 years in what's being described as a major loss of face for Washington. Prices appear set to soar in the United States, and there seems to be little to anything Washington can do about it. A four-member SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule carrying the first Native American woman successfully docks with the International Space Station, the ISS. The capsule, dubbed Endurance, was blasted off into space on Wednesday from NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Its docking with the ISS took place after a 29-hour flight. That brings an end to World Bulletin for this hour.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. We'll be right back.
in the limelight.
The United States is the only large, wealthy country in the world that doesn't have universal health care. The U.S. healthcare system ranks last among high-income countries. And the bad news comes when the media announces yet another drop in life expectancy in the United States for the second year in a row, which should be blamed mostly for the poor healthcare system in this country. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details on this issue. The title of the article is, "The U.S. Experiences Drop in Life Expectancy for Second Year in a Row." Stay tuned, please. Truthout website recently wrote, "Life expectancy in the United States has dropped for the second year in a row, a decline that is largely due to the coronavirus pandemic and the country's inequitable healthcare system. Before the pandemic, the average life expectancy in the U.S. was 78 years and 10 months. In 2020, that number dropped to 77 years, and last year, it dropped to 76 years and 1 month. The last time the nation's life expectancy was this low was more than two decades ago, in 1996. The current drop is the largest two-year decline in the U.S. in almost 100 years of tracking the data. The life expectancy for members of marginalized communities has undergone a particularly precipitous drop. Over the past 2 years, the life expectancy for Native Americans and Alaska Natives dropped by around 6.6 years. It's a ridiculous decline. When I saw a 6.6-year decline over 2 years, my jaw dropped. I made my staff rerun the numbers to make sure," said Robert Anderson, chief of Mortality Statistics Branch of the National Center for Health Statistics. The life expectancy for Native Americans and Alaska Natives is now just 65 years, according to the new numbers. This figure is equivalent to the nation's life expectancy overall in 1940s. According to the Truthout, these numbers were released in a government report recently which cited the pandemic as the central reason for the decline. But experts say additional factors played a role, as other wealthy nations have not seen the same drops, and some have begun to see their life expectancies recover from declines brought on by the pandemic. Stephen Wolf, Director Emeritus of Center on Society and Health at Virginia Commonwealth University, attributes the discrepancy to the fact that other countries have had more effective vaccination campaigns and populations that are more willing to social distance and wear masks. The U.S. healthcare system has also contributed to the decline, he said. While the U.S. is a world leader in terms of what kind of care it can provide, there are widespread socioeconomic disparities that make access to care more difficult, particularly for marginalized communities. Wolf said to the New York Times, "The United States is clearly an outlier. Notably, the U.S. is the only large wealthy country in the world without universal health care." And New York Times had this headline, "U.S. life expectancy falls again in historic setback. It wrote, "The decline during the pandemic is the sharpest in nearly 100 years, hitting Native American and Alaska Native communities particularly hard. The average life expectancy of Americans fell precipitously in 2020 and 2021, the sharpest two-year decline in nearly 100 years, and a stark reminder of the toll exacted on the nation by the continuing coronavirus pandemic. In 2021, the average American could expect to live until the age of 76, federal health researchers reported recently. The figure represents a loss of almost 3 years since 2019, when Americans could expect to live an average nearly 79 years. The reduction has been particularly steep among Native Americans and Alaska Natives, the National Center for Health Statistics reported. Average life expectancy in those groups was shortened by 4 years in 2020 alone. The culminative decline since the pandemic started, more than 6.5 years on average, has brought life expectancy to 65 among Native Americans and Alaska Natives, on par with the figure for all Americans in 1944. In 2021, the shortening of lifespan was more pronounced among white Americans than among black Americans, who saw greater reductions in the first year of the pandemic. According to New York Times, while the pandemic has driven most of the decline in life expectancy, a rise in accidental deaths and drug overdoses also contributed, as did deaths from heart disease, chronic liver disease, and diabetes. This is, until now, experts have been accustomed to measuring life expectancy changes in increments of months, not years. Even small declines in life expectancy of a tenth or two-tenths of a year mean that, on a population level, a lot more people are dying prematurely than they really should be, said Robert Anderson, chief of mortality statistics at the NCHS. But the coronavirus was not solely to blame. Long-standing health problems rooted in poverty, discrimination, and poor access to healthcare left Native Americans and Alaska Natives particularly vulnerable to the virus, said Dr. Ann Bullock, former director of diabetes treatment and prevention at the Federal Indian Health Service Agency and a member of the Minnesota Chippewa tribe. New York Times says one in seven Native Americans and Alaska Natives has diabetes, the highest rate among racial or ethnic groups in the United States of America, and many struggle with obesity or excess weight. Both conditions make people more susceptible to severe COVID-19 and crowded, multi-generational housing adds to the risk. Americans suffer from what experts have called the U.S. health disadvantage, an amalgam of influences that erode well-being, Dr. Wolf said. These include a fragmented, profit-driven healthcare system, poor diet, and a lack of physical activity, and pervasive risk factors such as smoking, widespread access to guns, poverty, and pollution. The problems are compounded for marginalized groups by racism and segregation, he added. The result is a high disease burden among Americans and shorter life expectancy compared with that in comparable high-income nations over the last two decades, Dr. Wolf said. Over a million Americans have died of COVID-19 and more died in 2021 than in 2020, despite the availability of vaccines. To date, only two-thirds of Americans are fully vaccinated and only one-third have had a booster shot.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us once again on this special episode of Muslim Lady. As always, I have the honor and privilege of being joined in the studio with my darling sister and expert, Sister Razia Shamri. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So today we're going to talk about something super duper interesting. It's mostly interesting because I think a new study has found that the new generation is more narcissistic, is moving toward being more narcissistic.
Than the past
generations, which is a funny thing to say, to look at. But once you really break it down and analyze it, social media plays a huge part in that because it's more individual-centered.
Mm.
And the new generation is more entitled and more sheltered. And
more sheltered to do what?
More sheltered from the perils of life, you know?
Exposed to real life?
Yeah.
So they're just like, the whole life is just, a showcase?
Yeah, their life is just the roses and butterflies. And because it is so... I just remembered a very crazy interview on Dr. Phil, but more on that later. We're going to be talking about narcissism today. And a quick question. Since the name of the show is Muslim Lady, I just need to know, Sister Razia, statistically speaking, are men, on average, more narcissistic or women?
Definitely men based on statistics.
For reals?
Yes.
Interesting.
Very interesting. So... But
are we here to talk about narcissistic men or women?
Of men.
Okay.
But either cases, we're going to talk about, because so many times we've talked about issues that, our topic is the Muslim lady, mm-hmm. whatever revolves around the Muslim lady's life.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's herself who's a narcissist or whether she marries a narcissistic person.
Yep.
So either way, our topic is going to be dealing with any of the two. So we're not going to say whether a man or a woman, but we're assuming that we're going to bring about detailed information about what kind of life you will have if you're a woman and you marry a narcissistic husband. And that is something that your blood will come to boil
I'll
tell you.
I know. It makes a hair on the back of my neck stand straight.
It definitely should.
It's such a scary situation to be in because narcissists can be super manipulative.
Exactly.
And they're so abusive. And they don't even know they're doing it.
Exactly.
Sucks for them. Okay, so let's get into it.
So we have a good narcissist and a bad narcissist.
All right. We're trying to discuss partners to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
People to avoid as partners.
Yeah. For number one, the first aspect of our discussion is going to be if you're dating or if you're seeing this guy if this guy has proposed to you and you want to get married to him, we're going to introduce, we're not psychologists, we're researchers, and based on our what we have read, we're going to provide information for you. And still, you can refer to a psychologist or you can, go to counseling sessions mm-hmm. for more tangible and in-depth understanding.
Yeah, this is just an eye-opener, right?
Exactly. Mm. And Zainab, subhanallah, that this kind of information open your eyes. It's to the, to the depth of the word, it's an eye-opener.
Mm.
And It doesn't really matter how old you are, because these traits, because if you're raised in a family or in an environment where people, you were always pampered and everything was provided for you, and you were always like praising your life by your parents and everyone, like
you're always celebrated.
You were always celebrated. Then you don't really know what it means to be around a narcissist. Mm. So this information that we are, inshallah, will provide for you in this program, pay really careful close attention, because it will happen to you. As you said in the beginning of the program, more and more people are getting moving towards narcissism. I think it's very logical, because once God was rejected in life, many years ago, when humanism was brought into the attention of mankind, and they thought that, we don't need God anymore, we don't need religion anymore, we human beings can take care of all our needs, all our problems. And then little by little, people became so self-centered, they became so individualistic in life that they only cared about themselves, and so many material values became valuable for people. For example, more power, more social status, more wealth, all these provide the context or the circumstances where you become prone to be a narcissist. Everyone sees the brand of the watch that you're wearing. Mm. Everyone sees the car that you're driving. Everyone sees like the meters of the house that you're living in. Everyone sees the country that you are in. So your worth, your value, your whole
identity
is based on how much wealth you have in life. So this will automatically drive you to narcissism. This is very natural, right? Anyhow.
I was actually just a quick like... There was this interview on Dr. Phil, and he had this young chap on his show, and the guy, he was like totally flamboyant, annoying type Gen Z. And the topic of discussion was his followers and his social media page. And then the kid straight up said that I've cut off my family. And Dr. Phil was like, why? FYI, just for the record, I don't even like Dr. Phil, but this particular interview was just so interesting to me. And the kid was like, because my family members, like, don't have any followers. Why would I be, like, talking to my mom? She's not even relevant. If she had followers and she was, like, something and she could bring followers for me, yeah, I'd talk to her. But she doesn't. So who is she?
Oh, my God.
And my jaw just dropped to the floor. I was like, please tell me this is made up. But it wasn't. That is, like, narcissism in its greatest, most... ridiculous form. How self-centered and entitled and oblivious people can be.
It is so, so sad, Zainab.
It's so sad because they lead such lonely lives.
You know, one of the questions that kept coming up in my mind was, what actually leads to narcissism?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
What is it in you? What is it? What happens in your life during the life of your course that leads you to this hellish? Did you know that this is a psychological disorder?
Yeah, of course.
It's actually
borderline
kind of
psychopath.
Exactly. You become a person. You turn into this monster, where you feel this is basically because you have no self-confidence.
Yes.
You have inner deep within, from deep within, you have very shallow little self-confidence. And you're like doing all this, you're putting all these masks, you're attaining wealth and position, and you're having this kind of treatment. You have this abusive relationship in your romantic relationship with your spouse just to cover up your petty soul. Mm-hmm. I mean,
to fill that
insignificant essence. You're nothing. You're seriously nothing.
They try to mask that. That's their coping mechanism.
This is so, so sad.
Exactly. Because they were so... I mean, like, narcissism happens in two ways.
Mm-hmm.
it's either someone was broken so much and their self-esteem and self-respect was shattered so much as a child, and that they were so traumatized, they resorted to creating this false identity for themselves, mm-hmm. or they were so super freaking sheltered, they don't even know what their real life is. The smallest bit of criticism destroys mm-hmm. their reality. They become so entitled that they feel the entire universe revolves around them.
Exactly. They see themselves, as you said, the center of the universe. Mm-hmm. So one thing that we can talk about is good narcissists and bad narcissists. So good narcissists, they're actually able to identify their tendencies of selfishness, and they really sometimes work hard to avoid them. Mm. Like, they know what the problem is with them, because the problem is that let me just finish with this. But as a result of their neurological limitations, because it's something, it has to do with your neurons and like the system of your brain and like how your brain functions, they're often deficient in being successful. They know that they have a problem with themselves, like psychologically, mentally, but they're not able to solve it. Mm. These are called good narcissists. And bad narcissists, on the other hand, do not have any kind of concern or reaction to the impact of their behavior on others. They don't really give a fig on how what you're saying and how you're treating others influence them. And they can be seen as showing the same qualities as a psychopath.
Oh, my goodness.
Imagine this. So bad narcissists are, in general, they're very insecure. And they have great concern for how others perceive them. That's why they have so much charm. That's why they work so hard to become rich. Or
they're so self-conscious.
So self-conscious. And, you know, Zainab, I more than being scared from them, I feel sorry for them.
Truly. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Muslim Lady here on IRB English Radio. We'll be back after a short break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Bad narcissists, on the other hand, they will, despite all the hardships that they have in life and all the hardships that they bring to other miseries, that they bring other people to other people's lives, they are so unhappy. Mm. They are so, I don't know, their life
so empty.
Is so meaningless, so
yeah.
empty, right? So let me tell you more about, a narcissistic person. These people, as you said earlier, they're very charming. They have a very charming personality. This is very interesting because when they appear in the public, the way they are dressed, mm. the way their body language is, like they're having tea in a very beautiful way, like, you know, the way their body gesture, their body position,
the way they
sitting,
carry themselves,
the way they carry themselves, the way they dress, the way they match their, like, the setting, matching, like, pants and shirt and like if there's
accessories
and like makeup and hairstyle, everything is so
immaculate,
well designed.
Yeah.
And you know, this is something that they have like a good amount of skill in because they have worked on it. Whatever you want to develop in yourself, it will come to perfection. And subhanAllah, narcissists are so good in presenting themselves. Their selection of words, their tone of voice, their appearance, their hairstyle, everything is so carefully selected that they would be so driven to them, that they would have wonderful charms, that people would really, not all people would be attracted
not
to
everyone
them.
Falls
not
for
everyone,
it.
But some,
I mean, everyone falls for it at the beginning.
Yeah.
But then some people are smart enough to identify, okay, you're a narcissistic jerk. Let's
exactly,
back off now.
Exactly. So this is something that they have.
All right. That's really cool. But that's just the tip of the iceberg, you guys. There's so much more. We're going to talk about the topic of narcissists and people to avoid as partners. On top of that list, here on Muslim Lady, we've been discussing the partners that should be avoided, and narcissists are on top of that list. More on that on future episodes. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The Mar-a-Lago resort and its owner, former U.S. President Donald Trump, have become one of the biggest concerns of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, with FBI agents raiding the Trump resort in Florida, known as Mar-a-Lago, to discover and seize confidential documents that Trump took with him after leaving the White House. This home and its owner became one of the biggest challenges and security concerns for the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. The 114-room house is currently the focus of a U.S. Justice Department's investigation into Trump's illegal seizure of presidential documents. Experts believe that the stealing and archiving confidential and national information of the U.S. government by Trump can be seen as an obstacle for him being approved as a candidate in the next U.S. presidential election and even create complex legal problems and challenges for him. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some world press and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Reuters news agency explains more about this big scandal in U.S. intelligence community. It says, some security experts warn the seizure of classified U.S. government documents from Donald Trump's sprawling Mar-a-Lago retreat spotlights the ongoing national security concerns presented by the former president and the home he dubbed the Winter White House. A search warrant shows Trump is under federal investigation for possible violations of the Espionage Act, which makes it unlawful to spy for another country to mishandle U.S. defense information, including sharing it with people not authorized to receive it. Former DOJ official Mary McCord said the Justice Department's search warrant raises concerns about national security. McCord said clearly they thought it was very serious to get these materials back into secured space, adding even just retention of highly classified documents in improper storage, particularly given Mar-a-Lago, the foreign visitors there and others who might have connections with foreign governments and foreign agents, creates a significant national security threat. Trump, in a statement on his social media platform, claimed the records were all declassified and placed in secure storage. However, McCord said she saw no plausible argument that he had made a conscious decision about each one of these to declassify them before he left. She said after leaving office, he did not have the power to declassify information. Bloomberg News reported U.S. federal prosecutors are likely to wait until after the November election to announce any charges against Donald Trump if they determine he broke laws. The unprecedented prospect of bringing charges against a former U.S. president is creating intense scrutiny of the Justice Department in the aftermath of its search of his home at Mar-a-Lago. A separate DOJ probe is focused on his effort to overturn the 2020 election, which he lost to President Joe Biden. Under longstanding department policy, prosecutors are barred from taking investigative steps or filing charges for the purpose of affecting an election or helping a candidate or party, traditionally 60 days before an election. This year, that would be by September 15th, which makes it unlikely anything would be announced until after November 8th. The FBI executed a search warrant on Trump's home on August 8th when agents removed 20 boxes of material containing 11 sets of classified material. Announcing charges against Trump prior to the election likely would be seen as a political ploy by his supporters to damage him and his endorsed candidates and could fuel unrest in the country. For example, South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham recently warned during an interview on Fox News, "There literally will be riots in the street if Trump is indicted for mishandling classified information." Trump immediately posted the clip to his social media site. The British daily The Guardian in an article sheds more light on the issue, saying on August 8, when dozens of FBI agents fanned through Mar-a-Lago bearing a search warrant issued by a federal judge, Trump lashed out. He said, "These are dark times for our nation," describing the legally authorized search as a raid and portraying it as a blatantly political attack akin to one of those broken third world countries. Over the past 4 weeks, a cascade of information has been released that tells the other side of the story. It transpires that the unprecedented nature of the FBI search was posited on even more unprecedented behavior of the 45th president of the United States. Trump has been archivally challenged to coin a phrase for many years. The roots of his refusal to abide by normal rules relating to documents stretch back at least to his refusal to disclose his own tax returns during the 2016 presidential campaign, a resistance to accepting public access to his personal papers that is the mirror image of his current claim that presidential records from his time in the White House belong to him. Ruth Ben Gitt, a New York University history professor who is author of Strong Men, Mussolini to the present and publisher of the Lucid newsletter about threats to democracy, says this blurring of public and private is central to his autocratic style of leadership. Ben Giat said, for Trump, records are not just documents. They are a measure of control, leverage over enemies and over his inner circle. This kind of leader doesn't recognize the division between public and private. They have a propriety mode of exercising power in which everything is theirs. By June 2018, such propriety behavior was expressing itself in the White House. Politico reported that Trump was routinely tearing up official records rather than filing them for safekeeping in the National Archives, as he was legally obliged to do. The U.S. government says it is in possession of evidence showing that former President Donald Trump seemed tried to obstruct a probe into the discovery of classified documents at the former president's residence. The Justice Department says it had evidence that classified documents were deliberately concealed from the FBI when it tried to retrieve them in June from Trump's Florida estate, prompting an unprecedented search of his home. Prosecutors laid out their evidence of obstruction of justice, saying that Trump aides both falsely certified in June that the former president had retained all the government records he had stored in his home after leaving the White House in January 2021. It also revealed that Trump lawyers explicitly prohibited government personnel from opening or looking inside any of the boxes inside the storage room when FBI agents first traveled to his Palm Beach Mar-a-Lago resort in June to retrieve their records. After the FBI's raid on the Trump's resort, many supporters in some American cities gathered in front of FBI's headquarters to express their protest and demand the dissolution of this institution. Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York and one of Trump's friends and lawyers, also said in an interview with the New York Post that if Trump wins the 2024 election, he will attack Joe Biden's house. While calling the FBI's attack on Trump's home in Florida political, he said if Trump wins the election, he will use the FBI to retaliate and attack Biden's house. Therefore, it can be said that considering the recent scandals in Trump's Mar-a-Lago house and the intelligence disorders inside the former U.S. administration, there is no clear future for Trump to become a candidate and win the 2024 elections. It can also be said that these events will have important effects on the incoming U.S. midterm elections.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB.